So the way I describe it is it felt like someone had turned gravity up on me. Like I was being pushed into the ground and my knees felt like someone had smashed them with a hammer. And it felt like I was being sort of crumpled. Some days I'm just shattered and just have to have a lie down. Today's not been great. Every day my head feels like it's burning pretty much constantly to some degree or another. It's a day-by-day step.
Hello and welcome to Life, Lemons and the Law, a Clark Wilmot podcast series discussing life-changing experiences of all kinds with the people involved. We'll talk about the immediate impact of those events as well as the long-term, often more positive, consequences. On this episode, the story of two people individually going through extremely difficult experiences whilst living alone, often in lockdown, in the midst of the pandemic. But it's also the story of the friendship created between those two, mostly via work video conferencing calls, and how that Teams call friendship has helped them both deal with some very dark times. So here on the podcast are Joe Campbell and Ruth Preston. Ruth, you first. Could you please introduce yourself?
So hi, I'm Ruth Preston. I'm the business development manager for the banking and finance sector. I've been with the firm for around 2.5 years now, and my job entails supporting the heads of sector around building the strategy and delivering really for the sector across the firm.
And Joe, if you could introduce yourself too.
So hi, I'm Joe Campbell. I am a partner within the commercial property division based in our Southampton office. I also have pleasure of being our head of our banking and finance sector across the firm for the real estate side.
Okay, Joe, let's start with you. What was lockdown like for you?
In hindsight, I mean, it's very difficult to remember what it was like. Thinking back now 2 years to all you can remember is those things like only being able to go out for a walk once a day and somehow miraculously needing to go to Waitrose at least once a day so I could get out twice. But I think, generally speaking, it was a positive and a negative, Ed. So it was, on the positive side, I did not have any distractions whatsoever because I live on my own. From a personal perspective, bloody awful, I think. You know, you live on your own, I think, probably straight into the first lockdown when we had to self-isolate for 2 weeks. I went into hospital, and then when I came out from hospital about a week later, I came down with what I'm pretty sure was COVID, but probably too early in the pandemic for regular testing to be available. And having to self-isolate in a house on your own for 2 weeks, not being able to go outside, and the neighbour parking his huge van in front of his house meant I couldn't even see people walking past. So it was very lonely and very isolating and quite scary, I think, probably at times. But I guess the work got me through it because you had colleagues and dialogue and communication through that source rather than perhaps what we would have been doing pre-pandemic.
Ruth, what about yourself? Have you got any standout memories from lockdown at its most crazy?
I remember as we went into the lockdown, the very first lockdown in March 2020, and I was kind of just at the beginning of kind of leaving a relationship, moving out of a long-term relationship. So I actually broke up with my kind of former long-term partner in April of 2020. So in those first few weeks when we were in lockdown, we were sort of trying to live two separate lives in one house, only being allowed to go out once a day and only being allowed out for an hour. My poor dog, poor Charlie, was being walked for her maximum hours capacity with both me and my partner, not together, but very separately, so that we obviously had a break from each other in the house. Those first few weeks, and then he did eventually leave our house, leave the flat. But those were certainly those first few weeks were pretty crazy.
That sounds exceptionally difficult. Right. So on top of all these experiences, all stressful in and of themselves, you've both had hugely impactful experiences unrelated to COVID, unrelated to lockdown. So, Joe, can you tell us about your diagnosis?
Yeah. So as I mentioned earlier, I was struggling with my mobility quite badly just before lockdown. And it was getting progressively worse. So I went to the GP. They said, oh, you need to go to hospital. I think they thought I would have had a stroke. which thankfully it wasn't. But I went in, got diagnosed a few months later once they had to go through the processes and do MRIs and all sorts of every test under the sun. Got diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, which was a bit of a shocker. And I'm still coming to terms with and dealing with. Some days are better than others. And yesterday, for example, I was absolutely awful. So yeah, pretty much of a shell shock, really. And then trying to come to terms with that whilst still carrying out all the work and all the pressures that come with the day job was quite challenging. Still is.
Before you were diagnosed, did you have any inkling?
No.
Or really an understanding of what multiple sclerosis is?
No. Well, it's been difficult getting used to it, trying to get information about it. MS is difficult, I think, for some people to understand what it is. And either they think it's terminal cancer or motor neurone disease or it's ME. And I think multiple sclerosis is, unless you know somebody who has it or have had somebody in your life who's had it or got it, I don't think it's very well understood, because I think a lot of the time people with it all suffer differently. I found it difficult with trying to explain to people what it is since I've been diagnosed with it and how it affects me.
You mentioned mobility problems.
Yeah.
Give us some detail about that. What were the first manifestations of these mobility issues? What were you unable to do on a day-to-day basis?
So the way I describe it is, it felt like someone had turned gravity up on me, like I was being pushed into the ground and my knees felt like someone had smashed them with a hammer. And it felt like I was being sort of crumpled. Now I know that it's probably just my brain telling me that the signal's where I've, you know, overdone it, but it over-exaggerates it. Some days I'm just shattered and just have to have a lie down. Today's not been great. Every day my head feels like it's burning pretty much constantly to some degree or another, ignoring the side effects of the treatments that I'm now taking, which also do very similar things. It's a day-by-day step. Yeah, I mean, I said that feeling like someone had turned gravity up in me, and I mentioned it to one of my GPs recently, and they said, like you're on the moon, like clomping around because you feel like your knees are busted and you feel like it feels like you're wearing lead boots. I can't really explain it. It's really difficult to explain the sensation, because it goes from, sometimes it feels okay and sometimes it literally feels like my knees are broken.
That's a brilliant description. It's extremely vivid, really powerful. Ruth, going to come to you.
Yeah.
You were on your own. You split up from your long-term partner. You were looking for a new house. That all sounds very stressful. You had COVID and lockdown added onto that. But there were other things happening in your life that were particularly difficult. Can you tell us some more about that?
Yeah. So, My family have been kind of dealing for quite a long time with illness for my dad. So my dad was diagnosed with cancer back in 2015. He didn't receive any sorts of treatments. It was a type of blood cancer, effectively, which meant that his immune system was massively compromised. So he was very much sheltering. He was very much kind of on his own with my mum down in Cornwall. I hadn't seen him since Christmas of 2019. That was the last time I'd seen him. And then obviously when COVID had hit kind of the beginning of 2020, my parents had gone down to Cornwall pretty much to hide, to isolate from the world, to keep him away from any sort of infection. Towards the end of the summer last year, my dad had kind of presented with sort of confusion. He was losing mobility. Short-term memory was a big challenge for him. And then at a certain point, he'd pretty much decided that he wasn't going to get out of bed. And having had this kind of conversation with my mom, he wasn't very well. She'd eventually managed to convince him to go into the local hospital down in Cornwall. And it was there that they did various tests. And then we eventually had, kind of beginning of September, a diagnosis of brain tumours, quite serious brain tumours. And he was then being sort of cared for in various hospitals across the southwest in Cornwall, and deteriorated pretty rapidly. He died on the 11th of October.
Thanks, Ruth. So you're both experiencing these extraordinary, difficult things. Did you both know that each of you were experiencing these difficult times? Were you conscious of that? And was it difficult discussing those things initially? Joe, were you forthcoming with your colleagues, and Ruth especially, with your diagnosis?
I'm not going to be shy from being honest about what I'm suffering with, but at the same time, it's not something I go around just shouting willy-nilly unnecessarily. But I think probably Ruth certainly was one of the few people that I sort of opened up to, probably because the sheer amount of time that she demands of my attention with work, that we speak so regularly, it just comes up in conversation probably more so than it does with other people. I think from my perspective, the whole experience that Ruth had, and it sounds awful to say it, but it does put my experience into context of, I have a life-changing condition, which I'm coming to terms with, but it's not life-ending. It's not something that is potentially going to kill me or that leaves my loved ones without me. You know, there are people out there dealing with all sorts of horrible things during the pandemic and have been, a lot of which are worse than mine.
Ruth, were you aware when Joe was going through that life-changing, very difficult diagnosis, were you aware that something was wrong and what it was?
I don't think I was aware necessarily what it was. I think I was aware that there was something going on. Well, I suppose as well, because it coincided with that transition from working with people in person, so actually being in offices and talking to people, mm-hmm. and going to see them, as we would have done in 2019. And then kind of obviously in 2020 at that early stage when we were all first working online. So it was quite difficult to gauge how people were.
Had we not had the pandemic, I probably wouldn't have spent anywhere near as much time with Ruth because of the geographical restrictions of her being not in the Southampton office where I spend most of my time. Poor old Ruth then means that she gets even more time with me.
After the virtual nagging, so being able to nag Joe over Teams calls. And
you're very good at it, Ruth.
So did you know each other, albeit in a more formal work sense, prior to the pandemic, before your sort of virtual interactions? Can you remember those times, your relationship before lockdown? What was that like?
Yeah, so I mean, Ruth, you probably remember better than I when you joined, but it was not an awful long time before the pandemic struck. And the first time Ruth and I actually ever met was we ended up going to looking back on it now, feels like an excellent thing to do of a quiz in person.
I've got you.
with a banking client. And we did know each other, but it was very much in a different format.
And it was a real eye-opener as to Joe's quite extraordinary knowledge of Marvel superhero characters, which quite frankly is, you know, if there was a mastermind subject with that as a specialist subject, that is you, Joe.
What can I say? I've never claimed to not be a stupid geek.
So is it fair to say that your friendship blossomed virtually? So yes. It's almost as a direct result of innumerable Zoom and Teams calls.
Yes, and I think learning to do business development in a different way than we were before, it does slightly frustrate me at times when people say, oh, I couldn't do any business development during the pandemic. You think we can, you just do it differently. And Ruth has been very good at coming up with ideas. Some of them worked, some of them didn't, to try and sort of keep in touch with our clients in a way that they felt that we cared about them.
I mean, I sort of went from being on the road pretty much all the time and being between offices and meeting clients to basically being at home. And how do you create, forge new connections and build relationships in a virtual capacity? And it was extraordinarily challenging, partly because, I mean, obviously doing it virtually was new to everybody. And then understanding that we were all dealing with shock and fear of the pandemic, and no one in the country was excluded from that. It was kind of, you know, almost the emotional draining of just people on an individual level. And I think that was a big part of being there and keeping human contact, even if it is on a screen, is a huge part of how we've all kind of come out of it relatively unscathed.
I don't know what I would have done. I swear, I certainly would have had a mental breakdown if we'd have gone through the pandemic, if it hadn't have been for regular contact that I have with clients and colleagues to talk to. If I'd have just been sat at home working at a computer without speaking to anybody, I would have gone bonkers, I suspect. I've said to Ruth before, as far as I'm concerned, you know, we work together, but she's my friend. And that wouldn't have been the case probably had it not been for the pandemic, because we would have been working in different offices geographically most of the time. And a bit like some people have really learned that their work-life balance has improved, there are positives that we need to take out of the pandemic and not lose sight of. And new friendships, new connections, new ways of working are all great, and we need to make sure we don't lose those.
Ruth, the question for you, when your father was dying, you said it happened very quickly, very abruptly. Were you comfortable opening up to work colleagues in a virtual environment? Or was that something you had to almost force yourself to do? Was it something you were uncomfortable with? Or was it something that felt natural?
Over the course of the 2 years, I live on my own. I have multiple conversations with my dog, and everyone thinks I'm pretty balmy. But if I hadn't had the regular conversations with colleagues and clients, I don't know how I would have got through those 2 years. And in that sense, you know, talking to Joe and telling him, you know, what we were looking at as a family, sort of felt, you know, that was, of course I was going to tell him. He's my closest work friend. I consider him a very close friend anyway. So it would only have been right for me to have told him what was going on, filled him in on what the situation was. And then obviously in the morning that it happened, and we got the news from the hospital, and literally I think Joe was probably the third or fourth person that I messaged to tell. It felt totally natural to do that.
Is there a lesson that you've learned, having been able to lean on each other in extraordinarily tough times, that you could pass on to others about the value of opening up?
I think it's something that's certainly changed over the course of the pandemic. And I think the lines between our professional life and our personal lives have blurred so much more, partly because you've obviously got a camera into my spare room most days of the week. But because we've all kind of worked flexibly and we've changed that kind of sense of this is my office persona and this is my personal persona. And I think as those have merged, it's created a much richer culture. But for me, it's much kind of richer in terms of the quality of the relationships that I have with people, because I don't just know them on a professional level of going for coffee with clients or just doing work activities, that you get a little bit more of a sense of who they are as people. And certainly that's a real benefit. I think that's been a really kind of strong benefit coming out of the pandemic. And certainly, you know, my professional self, for example, would have been mortified at the idea of kind of...
When do I get to meet her, Ruth? When do I get to meet her?
She left ages ago. She resigned. She said she didn't want to work with Joe. The idea of me being emotional in front of a colleague 3 years ago, I would have been mortified. It would not have happened. And I think I've sat on Teams call and cried in front of Joe several times in the last few months as I've kind of worked through a grief process and, you know, talked about what's been going on with family, what's been going on with all of that sort of stuff. And that's what the firm would traditionally have called my senior stakeholder. But he's also my friend, and he's also the person that I work with most. So to be able to have that as a friendship, as well as a kind of how we support each other in what we do for the business, I think only makes it richer and better quality.
All of that is true. I think as a firm, we're very lucky, I think, that we do have that culture actually of being supportive and collegiate anyway. The flip side to the benefits of things like, you know, you and I being able to work easier together because of Teams, etc., is that from a management perspective, it's very different with people you would normally have been physically in the room with in the office every day to make sure or to be aware of where other people might be having troubles, because you're not physically seeing them as often, to make sure that you're not missing out on checking that they're okay. I think it is incumbent on anybody in a management position to probably have been doubly checking in on people in our teams with our colleagues regularly. a fit state of mind or doing well or struggling with whatever it might be, you know, it is more difficult. So there are positives to take out of the pandemic in the way that we communicate and can build relationships, etc. But then there's also bits that have been really difficult.
And perhaps if organisations, not just yourselves, are working remotely from here on in, or at least partially remotely, then that's the lesson to take away, is to check up on each other's well-being.
100%. But we need to walk the walk rather than just talk the talk. We need to actually not just say we're concerned about our colleagues' well-being, but we need to actually do it, implement it, find ways. I mean, like this, you know, trying to open up and talk about the difficult things that have happened 20 years ago. If I looked at what my position would have looked like, it would have scared the what's his name out of me, thinking, how on earth do they do that? How on earth are they always billing X pounds per year and keeping busy? And the answer is, you get more experience, there's probably less things you come across that are new. It's still equally difficult, and you're just better at hiding it.
That point that Joe makes is really important, that I think there is a kind of message there about supporting people as they come up through the ranks. I mean, certainly I can't imagine having done the last 2 years if I was starting out in my career. I mean, I think that would have just been extraordinarily difficult. It's always got huge, huge challenges for everybody, but it does get a little bit easier, and it does get easier with experience. And hopefully, although the pandemic would have been really difficult in terms of not having that opportunity to learn by osmosis, hopefully opening the communication channels in this way can start to kind of compensate for that a little bit.
Joe, why are you friends with Ruth?
We have stuff in common. We get on, but I think ultimately you gravitate towards people who are often similar to you in terms of, I would like to think I'm someone who cares, and I know that Ruth is. And that sort of personality, I think, similar sort of sarcastic sense of humour. I don't know whether you can always pinpoint why you get on with people, but I think it's probably because we're quite similar.
Ruth, why are you friends with Joe?
No idea. No, I'm a joke.
You have to be.
Am I? you do attract people who are kind of similar to yourself. Just one example, I remember kind of in the first few weeks coming back to work after my dad's funeral and having various conversations with Joe, when he would kind of, we'd go through our huge great big to-do list of all sorts of things all about work, and then he'd kind of say at the end, are you okay? Do you want me to ask if you're okay? And they'll be like, no, I really don't want you to ask me if I'm okay, because I really don't want to have this conversation right now, because I might just have another cry on you. Having that level of understanding with someone who's kind of like, I'm asking if you're all right, I'm here if you want to have someone to talk to, but equally I get that right now you might not want to have that. That's a very perceptive thing to have in someone. You could only have that in someone that you'd call a friend.